Prepare to be astonished.
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Matt Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
Good evening and welcome back to an adventure in history. I'm so excited for this evening because of the evening that I had a week ago, which was absolutely fantastic.
Which we have to confess, we don't do the show live.
Right.
Or else we would have talked about this.
We would have.
But we recorded before last week's amazing musical stairs concert at the Astoria Column.
And it was so good. And I wanted to talk about it some more. So I begged Mac to let me talk about it some more. And he said, okay, only if we bring on this special guest.
And everybody knows him. Are you loved by 90% of the population? 95% of the population? 20% of the population? What percentage of people love you? And how many just want to punch you in the face?
When people see a car going backwards down the street, they usually have an idea. Oh, that's that guy that does the underground tours, isn't it? And has a train and a clown car and a rat rod.
There's a lot of different definitions for you.
Yeah.
I always tell people, like, if they're going to encounter you, I either describe you as crazy clown car guy, or if I know they're going to go, like, take a tour at the underground tour, or if I know they're going to see you, I say, just call him a son of a clown.
I know where they have been then. They've been to the Heritage House and the Film Museum and part of the system. Yes. Son of a clown.
I do like yelling that at you on the street as I drive past.
I hear that occasionally, yes, from you.
Also known as Jeff Daly. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, it's fun. Thank you.
And I'm excited to talk about the show, about musical stairs, because it honestly was just... It was fantastic.
And we've had him on the show before, but you've never had him on the show before.
I haven't. So, no. Yeah. So you can take a break, Mac.
Yeah, and that's right.
Jeff and I'll take over.
So she's going to have probing news kind of questions because she's the professional. I'm just the goofball that somehow...
Did you warn her about me?
I think everybody knows about you.
Yes.
Well, but sometimes your co-host... But like, I wasn't expecting that to happen.
But she did burst out laughing when you took your jacket off because your shirt says, that's a horrible idea. What time?
That's the way we work sometimes. Yep.
Jeff, will you do a radio show with me? That's a horrible idea.
What time?
And here he is. Okay, let's
get rid of our usual stuff because Jeff's mind, we can go anywhere.
Okay.
It's a crazy, scary, funny, wonderful place.
So you probably won't go here. And this probably is not. A verb. And it's a verb. It's a verb. Word. It's a lost word
All
that
right.
we're bringing back. And it's latipulate. Latipulate.
And it's a verb.
It's a verb.
To latipulate.
Yep.
I believe to latipulate is to show up and make a scene when you show up. I don't know why. Maybe it's because you're drunk. Maybe it's because you're loud or obnoxious. Or maybe you're wearing something garish. I don't know. But I think you're making a scene when you arrive somewhere.
Okay. It's not that. It's not even close.
Not even
Jeff,
close.
Any ideas?
Yes. I thought this was a family show and you're not allowed to say that before 8 p.m.
Okay, so any guess or no?
We're both
no,
wrong.
You're both wrong. The word is latipulate and it's to hide in a corner.
Oh.
Something that neither of you are going to do.
Oh, I do.
Oh, you do?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I've spent some time there.
Nope. Okay. So the two men in this room latipulate often.
Sometimes.
To hide in a corner.
I think it's been a long time since Jeff has hidden in a corner.
Probably, yeah. And although you might want to, you can't in your current role.
That's right. Yes, I desire to,
yes.
But I do not and cannot. But that does, before, I mean, I still have this day in history, but I do want to just jump on this one. How much like you are now were you like as a young kid?
Exactly the same.
Were you really?
Yes.
Okay. Because I could see that either being one of two things. Either you have always been goofy and silly and full of enthusiasm and energy, or I could see that this is overcompensating for like age 2 to age like 14 or 15. And then you were like, no, I'm not going to be that wallflower anymore.
I used to have a hat that says, here comes trouble. And it sort of became a signature. Yes.
All right.
There we go.
There we go. All right. So let's get rid of the history highlights. These are things that happened tomorrow, October 7th. As always, beer trivia, Jeopardy finales, whatever, or icebreakers. So I do have one. I want you to guess the year first.
Okay.
So carbon paper is patented in London by inventor Ralph Wedgwood. What year is carbon paper?
Didn't we have the typewriter recently?
Oh, we might have.
1815.
I am stunned. Do you have a guess? What year was carbon paper patented?
Well, not century, but we're going for a year?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. 1855.
See, you're both so earlier than I would have guessed, but you were crazy close. 1806.
Oh, okay. I mean, I knew it had to do with the typewriter, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
and obviously we did have printing presses. I don't know if that was the combination or if it was handwritten through the carbon paper or what, but yeah, I would not have guessed that early. And do kids today even know what carbon paper is or like the smell of the carbon paper?
No. Oh, I don't think they not. Would. Or tear sheets, right? Yeah. You know what a tear sheet is.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yes. I mean, they don't even do tear. I don't think they do tear sheets anymore.
So anybody under the age of 30, I want you to look at your cell phone right now and realize its ancestors had tails and it plugged into the wall.
They're so right. confused.
And
right
why
now.
Did they make carbon paper?
I don't to make copies, I guess.
Because somebody would be having, they'd have coal dust on their hands and they'd realize that they were able to make handprints on paper. Then somebody's thought about it and said, well, what if we were able to attach that dust to another piece of paper and then it would transfer any kind of image?
Is that the origin story?
Sure.
Are you making that up?
Yes.
Because that sounded almost legitimate.
It sounds pretty good to me.
It did. All right. So moving back, though, the now in order. 714, people riot due to beer tax in Alkmaar, Netherlands. I think we've talked about this once before.
Have we?
A beer tax. People rioted over a beer tax. You can't hit them when things they love. Right. And that was 1714. Okay, 1900. The term orienteering is first used for an event.
Orienteering?
Yeah, okay. So like the Boy Scout geek in me, I like using a map and compass. I find it somewhat fun. And you take the bearing, and that's called orienteering.
Okay, so, there you go.
All right, that one was just for me, apparently. Yep. 1916. This one's for you, Alana, because you're a football fan, aren't you?
I am.
So 1916, Georgia Tech shuts out Cumberland in most lopsided college football game in history. What do you think the score was?
Ooh.
1916.
Yeah, see, back then, I don't know.
It was 222-0.
Yeah, never. I never would have guessed that.
No.
That's unbelievable.
Doesn't that seem like at some point you should take some pity on the opponent?
Georgia Tech, come on.
Yeah. 222-0. I mean, I think you could have stopped at 100-0.
I mean, I went to Miami, so I'm not opposed to blowouts, but, you know.
Are you sure the other team was there?
Maybe. I don't know. And the coach of Georgia Tech was a guy named Heisman.
Oh.
The Heisman Trophy.
I love that.
You'd think he would know better. All right. 1949, East Germany is created. 1960, CBS broadcasts the premiere episode of Route 66. I kind of just put this one in for you, Jeff.
All right.
Because Route 66, they filmed here.
I was there.
There was an episode. See, I kind of thought so. So yes. I thought maybe we'd talk about that too. 1996, Rupert Murdoch launches Fox News. That kind of had an impact.
It did.
2001, U.S.-led attack on Afghanistan begins. 2003, the governor, Arnold Schwarzenegger, is elected California governor.
Oh, California.
But our history highlight of the day, I think had the most impact in history. 1913. The moving assembly line debuts at the Ford factory.
Oh, okay.
See, people think, oh, Ford, he invented the car. No, absolutely not. But he invented the ability to mass produce.
Yep.
And the assembly line, the moving assembly line is what, and universal parts is what made that possible.
Okay.
So 1913, on October 7th, the biggest impact in history. Would I miss anything?
No, that was a good one.
And Mr. Ford's favorite line was, you can have the car in any color you like, as long as it's black.
See, I always like that people, the other car manufacturer said, why are you paying your guys so much? Because he paid almost like double the hourly rate or daily rate of other employees at other car manufacturers. And he said, because I want my employee parking lot to be filled with cars, not with bicycles. And nice. I kind of love that wisdom. That
right.
I want to pay my guys enough to buy this stuff.
Yeah.
So raising
advertising. Yeah.
Yeah.
That works.
So there we go.
Good.
So I don't know what Oh, here's a good transition. We always try to get a good transition. So you just said advertising works. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people ask, why did we just do this concert up at the Astoria Column?
Right, Musical Stairs.
And my big answer is, in 2 years, the Astoria Column turns 100. And we don't know what we're going to do yet, but we plan on doing some cool stuff. And we wanted to start planting the seed that we could do some cool stuff. And one of his nicknames apparently is Cool Stuff. No, it's not. But it could be. So, Jeff, you had this idea of a concert. You actually brought to the Friends like 10 months ago, 12 months ago.
Actually, about 2 years ago.
2 years ago.
It started with, with one time I was talking with Willis and said, Willis, I've always had this idea. And then that was the beginning of it. Growing up here as a kid, the Column was our playground. We were there all the time. Why wouldn't you be? It was a great place to ride your bicycle to. We'd leave the house at 8 in the morning. We'd tell our parents we'd be back at 5 for dinner. We would take off. We'd ride our bikes to the Column. We'd spend all day up there. Unfortunately, we didn't have the paper airplanes, but we had lots of other things we threw off the top.
Sure.
Footballs, basketballs. We'd play baseball games. We'd sit there and not just drop the ball, but we would have somebody up there pitching the ball as hard as they could. People would be on the ground trying to hit the ball back up to us.
So I would be remiss in my duties to safety and the city of Astoria and the Parks Department and the Friends of the Astoria Column if I didn't remind everybody that anything except for the balsa wood little gliders that are sold in the gift shop up there is illegal. Not just frowned upon, it is illegal to throw anything else off the top of the Astoria Column. And then I will also add, separate from all that, it's a miracle that you and your friends survived to adulthood.
It is indeed. It is indeed. Especially as we would try and ride the rail on our butts down the rail down there, trying to slide all in one take.
Oh my gosh.
Yes, yes.
So that begs the question, what was there? I know Michael Foster years ago told me that he worked the gift shop up there selling postcards or something, I think, at one point. Was there a staff of any kind? Was it just a caretaker that opened the door? I mean, was there any supervision? Obviously,
no.
You're driving around on your bikes.
It was our town. It was our column. We all took care of it. We didn't litter. We did things that today is frowned upon, of course. But no, we took care of the place. That was our playground.
Mm-hmm. Was there a door to the column then?
Oh, sure. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, so, to keep us out late at night.
Okay.
Yeah, of course. There would be that. Mm-hmm. I don't think there was any lighting up there or anything else. So it was at nighttime, it was kind of an empty place, except for the kids went up in their cars and wanted to maybe get a little nookie-nookie.
That's our viewpoint.
So something I was proud of and excited by during the Astoria Bicentennial, and we were creating the logo for the Bicentennial, and we were asking the public, what, when you think of Astoria, what do you think of? And that's why we incorporated the column and the bridge in that logo. And it's actually on the city logo is the column. What did you associate with Astoria? Was the column centerpiece in your thoughts about Astoria?
No, I think it was the canneries on the waterfront is what we all related to. It was the column was in our town. We were used to it. We grew up with it. I don't think it was like when the Space Needle was built in the for the World's Fair and whatever year that was, where all of a sudden it appeared. That then became the icon for Seattle. That's what everybody talked about. The column we had, it'd been there since the 20s. So it was like, of course that was there. What's different about it?
Okay. All right. So I want to make sure we give due diligence because the concert was your idea. And in case we briefly mentioned it last week, but talk about what it was. What did we do? What did we just do that we called Musical Stairs?
Well, it was Musical Stairs. I was so happy to come up with that name because it was an issue to figure out, what am I going to call this thing? As kids, we would go into the column. We knew somebody was there, Tom or Jim. We didn't know where they were. Lewis.
Clark.
Lewis.
Clark.
Someone like Marco Polo. That's how we discovered where you were on the steps of the steps. So we always played with the echo. We'd go in there with our kazoos, our tonettes. We would do our own little silly concerts in there. And it wasn't until about 3-4 years ago that I was downtown looking up at the column with the lights going on and off, saying, you know what? That column looks like maybe an oboe, maybe a clarinet with the light hitting it. It's reflecting. And that's what sort of gave me the idea of saying, what if we played music inside instead of yelling Lewis and Clark or Marco and Polo? And that's what sort of started the concept.
And then when you took that concept, what was the reception? Because even when I first heard it, I was initially thinking the sound was not going to be amazing.
That's exactly what everybody said, is when we started talking with it, with musicians and all, everybody, if they didn't look big-eyed and kind of intrigued by it, I didn't even further the conversation with them. Because most people just said, oh, it'd be terrible in there. It's just nothing but a big echo chamber. And it wasn't until I went up with Christopher Davies with his viola da gamba, 17th century, looks like a cello. And I begged him to come up there one evening, and we went inside, and he started stringing it. And after about 15 seconds, he looked at me and he went, oh my gosh, this is fabulous. And that's when I knew that we were on the road to being able to present a musical concert from within. Originally, the idea I was thinking is that there would be a musician on each step going all the way to the top of the column on different landings. I think there's five of them up there. That didn't end up being that way because there is a lot of other technical issues of having a musician spread apart that far. But yes, that was what started it. And if somebody that we went to and said, you want to be part of this, if they didn't come back and go, oh, this will be epic, then they weren't talked to anymore, because that was the group we got.
Yeah, you know, when I first heard of it, I liked the idea. I thought it was going to be a wonderful experiment. But I have some musicians that I like, and they've done, you know, the Cave album or in such and such cathedral album. And I either sometimes love it, or I'm like, it's way too echoey. It's just hideous. It sounds like they put a mic in a corner of a room and started playing or singing in the other side of the room, and then that it's not doing anything. So I figured it was either going to be fabulous or it was just going to be a terrible echo.
And I didn't know. I am not a musician. I don't play music. I listened to it, of course, but I had no idea what it was going to be like, and what was going to be some of the characteristics and the issues that the musicians would have to deal with, which we did find out as we started practicing and doing it more and more. But yeah, it was kind of a grand experiment. It had never been done before. Nobody has ever played inside the column and had it recorded. There have been some little piano. There was a piano concert one time on the outside patio, mm-hmm. which was, you know, sounded terrific as people were there looking at the view. This hadn't been done before, which just intrigued me. How could that not have happened yet? It's just begging for it.
Because you hadn't come along yet.
Oh, yeah, here he comes
again. You hadn't talked to the right people.
That's it.
So I want to ask Alana, because you were there with your family, mm-hmm. and one of the things that I loved about this idea wasn't just the music, but we picked music from the time periods that's on the outside of the column. And then you, Jeff, and Jude did voiceovers explaining the time period that was portrayed on the outside, and then the specific music and why it was chosen, and then who was playing it with what musicians. Were you and your family, were you just like, okay, or did that narration help? And I've had a lot of people say, you know, I really liked learning more about the column and the history. Things I didn't know.
I loved the narration. Loved, loved, loved it. I mean, it was amazing choreography of narration, lights, and music. Truly. I brought extended family. So we were age 4 to 80 at this event. So, you know, again, seeing this gorgeous sunset, it's blue skies, it was cold, we had blankets. I mean, it was just absolutely beautiful. But the people you had doing the voiceovers really set the mood, right? Because the grounds just got quiet. And there's probably about, I said about 200, but did you have a...
Our number officially is about 280.
Okay, so almost 300 people, and it just got quiet. And so you're up there at the top of the hills, it's dark, right? The lights are just starting, and you then start hearing these different stories. So I thought it was amazing. I mean, the narration honestly really did it so much, because again, I love music, right? So I was going to be there for the music no matter what. But then to hear those stories and to hear those voices bring that to life, it was fantastic. I can't wait for the next one. I mean, it was, I was texting Mac right away, and we were sharing with our friends and family. Even my dad was like, he kind of was like your t-shirt, that, you know, he's like, sure, I'm going to go to a concert at the column, be frozen. And then afterwards, he just said it was one of the best events he's ever been to in Astoria.
Although I did like your text began with, I may not be the biggest donor to the Historical Society. And I texted back saying, maybe you are.
But I said, I'm your biggest cheerleader. Because again, everyone's like, why are we here? Yes. We're here for Mac.
it was a hard thing, I think, to explain. explain to people, and I don't know what people's expectations were. So I've been really curious since then. I've been asking people, like, what did they expect? What did they think it was going to be? And it's an odd kind of mix of expectations. Jeff, did you get any feedback or reactions ahead of time, like having to explain it in greater detail because they didn't understand? Or what's your thoughts on that?
Well, I wrote the original press release, which didn't say, and then Sam luckily rewrote it, and it sort of came together because it needed a fresh approach to it to try and explain it, because it was difficult to explain, because people would immediately go, well, it's going to be echoey. I mean, I can't see the musicians. No, you won't. They're inside. Well, then who wants to go? Who cares? Mac and I went up there. We were up there a couple nights, a couple different times, where I would talk about where the chairs were going to be and how the cars would be set up. And Mac kept saying, my favorite spot's behind the column, where there's nobody, and I'm over there just to be able to look at the stars, look at the trees, look at the town, be able to really digest, because there were so many elements to it. It wasn't just music. It was a surround sound event.
We were one of the rehearsals, is what you're talking about. I told you this right after the fact. It was still daylight. It wasn't a nighttime rehearsal, but I went behind the column, and I could hear the music perfectly because we were working with the mics and the sound at that point. So the speakers were there, and I kind of blocked out most of the parking lot. And I was looking at the trees over by the Cathedral Trail. And then I was trying to purposefully not look all the way to the left where I could see the gift shop and all the parking spots, but you still have to see some. But I was looking at the river, and there was eagle flying around, and it was some of the chamber music. So like the 1700s, maybe the early 1800s music. So it was a stringed instrument. I don't know instruments or music enough, but it was just such a moment of zen. It was just so peaceful, and there was nobody around me, and they were all blocked on the other side of the column. I could hear a few people talking, but that was it. It was just, I was like out in wilderness on the top of this beautiful hill with this giant monument behind me, listening to this beautiful music.
It was fun because I noticed during the concert there were people that were away from the crowd. They laid out a blanket, and they just laid on their back and stared at the sky. Watch the stars go by. They never moved. They just just took it all in. So that was the beauty of it, is that anybody could go up there and capture whatever element, whatever mood they wanted to get out of it.
And you also got a great snapshot too. So 280, and I'd say probably 200 at least, took the bus. And the buses were so smooth. I mean, I'm a former event coordinator, and they were spot on. I mean, easy to get on. And then the ride down, everybody got on a bus, and everyone was taken down in one fell swoop.
We were surprised. I thought the buses were going to have to make rounds, and we got almost everybody. Because a lot of people walked up the hill and walked back down the hill with flashlights and things. But we got everybody on those five buses, except for one person.
Oh,
and
no.
I felt so badly. So we drove her down, because she's like, I thought the buses were coming back. And I said, I thought they were too, but we kind of had everybody we thought. So we drove her down
technically she would have fit on one of the buses.
Yeah, she would have fit. So it was on us, and I didn't yell loud enough or something.
But that's good to know too, and to share when we do it again in 2 years, because you know the number of buses you need to make it happen for double the crowd.
Yeah,
too,
but right? I think part of it was that it was cold, and people were like, I want to get out of here. The concert's over.
Oh, sure.
It's time. Mm-hmm. I don't really want to wait. But we've got like 6 minutes left, Jeff. So I just want to publicly say, I think people were very aware this was your baby and that you were a part of all of it. But bottom line, this would not have happened and without your vision, but more your time and energy. You have done practically nothing but work on this for months now, and you've devoted your time, your energy. You have begged, borrowed, bullied anybody into helping you on this. Recruited a bunch of people to this. This would not have just happened with the Friends of the Historia Column staff and the Historical Society staff. And in fact, we were not a huge role in that. It was you recruiting volunteers and people to this cause. And I'm sure you owe a lot of debt to people that are going to call you in on, okay, it's time for this favor to be repaid. And I can't even imagine how much just personal time and resources you put into this. So on behalf of the entire community, a huge thank you, because this was an amazing experience.
Well, it took cooperation, and it took a cast of characters to be able to pull it off. So
how did you get these characters? So were they all local, or was it local and regional?
We had the artists. One of our musicians came from Seattle. So it was a whole gang and group of people.
Jennifer Crockett. Yep. I'm a huge fan. I mean, she was absolutely stunning. And then Deke, of course, was singing. Who was playing? You had somebody even playing the stair handle.
It was Jason Hall. He was playing the sticks and his pads on the railings of it to give the sounds of the train coming, which that was kind of our little fun surprise, was to introduce the joy train to it. Surprise the heck out of people, especially when they heard the train whistle in the distance going, that's interesting. This is talking about the train. And we don't have trains here. And then it appeared.
And then the smoke
yeah. And the lights. Yeah.
So that is, I mean, in bringing these artists together too, how did they pick their pieces? Did you pick those as well, or did they pick their own?
We were just working off the sgraffito, the story on the outside of the column. And we went to the musicians and said, we need to cover when Robert Gray came, when Lewis and Clark came, when the train comes, when all these events, and let them stew around and sit there and go, I think I'd have a piece that comes from that period and I would like to do it. For instance, Christopher Davies, it was for the War of 1812. He actually took his bow and he banged on his cello, creating these sounds of gunfire, cannon fire coming from ships. So all the musicians sort of did their own little segment and their own little personal touch to it.
That's great.
Yeah, they kind of owned it that way. Instead of us just saying, here's the music that we've picked and here's what we want you to play.
And there was no conductor in this.
Okay.
You know, you go to any performance and there is a man in front that's waving his arms and he's taking the musicians and cueing them. There was not only no conductor in this, they had limited sight lines of each other. They were guessing when it was going to start. Wow. 3, 2, 1. Yes, it was a big deal.
Well, again, the constraints of the building, right? Yep. I mean, it's a small space in there, and you got them all in there, and then the sound too. So, when you first did the sound, did you have to make many adjustments because it sounded wonderful?
No, we didn't have to do a thing. We just went in there. We found a spot for each person to be, and the interior did its job.
And so was it one mic down below or did you have?
Oh, no. We had about 14 microphones.
Got
there.
It. Yes. Did you go all the way to the top?
Not all the way
mic?
To the top.
No,
but there were microphones top and bottom. We were doing a stereo mix between those two and then individual mics on the instruments. Yeah.
So I will say, we might have put it in the program. I can't remember and I don't want to out her, but one of the musicians is actually claustrophobic.
Oh.
So just imagine.
Poor thing. Having,
like be crowded with these other musicians on a narrow staircase and inside a confined space.
And she was closest sounds. To the door. She
oh, good. Closest. Good. Well, she did fabulous, whoever she was.
So I got to ask, and we've only got a minute left, but one of the things about historians that grew up here, I'm always stunned that you keep in contact with all the people you grew up with. And if they're still alive, they still have a connection to Astoria. Almost nobody seems to move away and never think about Astoria again. Any of those kids that used to ride up with bikes, are they still around? And did you tell them about this?
I did. And they weren't there. Oh. I'm ashamed of them. Tim, Mike, Tom, you guys, come on.
They probably thought you were just going to stand inside and yell, Lewis.
Clark.
They're like, no, we've done that with you, Jeff.
We've already done that, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, maybe they could come back in another few years for another opportunity.
I hope we get to do it again. It'll be fun.
Me too.
Well, I did want to talk about like growing up here and hijinks as a kid, but we're kind of out of time.
So Jeff will have to come back.
We will have to bring him back.
That's a horrible idea.
So give a shout out quickly. Underground Tour is crazy fun. How do people find it? Because they should sign up and take it. It's fun and it's educational.
OldAstoria.com.
Well, that's pretty darn easy.
It is. And come back and join us again.
I will do that.
Thanks so much, Jeff.
You bet. Thanks, guys. I'm glad you guys are on the air and bringing it all to us.
Go make some history. We'll catch you next week. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for joining us for an adventure in history. An Adventure in History is created and produced by the Clatsop County Historical Society and brought to you by KMUN.